Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. I'm your host. My name's Hannah Norris, and I'm here with my co-host, technical assistance, producer.
Carl's only comedian, father-to-be.
He's gone back from being retired comedian.
Oh, was I retired? All right, sorry, ex-comedian.
Yeah.
Soon to be shelf stacker.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about other jobs I might do in the post-apocalyptic landscape.
Yeah, we are still mid-pandemic right now.
Yes.
And still in Australia. And this is a podcast about pregnancy, if you didn't know that, because that is what's happening in our lives right now. Still pregnant, still growing a baby.
Yes.
Currently at week 27 of the pregnancy. Now, Carl, do you remember what fruit or vegetable we're at?
Well, it was a butternut squash last time.
Yeah, which you've been waiting for
And what is it now? Is it moved on?
Yeah.
To...
You saw it the other day on that.
What's bigger than a butternut squash?
Lots of things.
Marrow.
No.
Is it a watermelon?
No.
What is it?
Bunch of bananas.
Oh, yes, a bunch of bananas.
Got to be big old bananas.
Big old bunch of bananas.
And we are still here in Australia. We're here in Melbourne, though. We are leaving. And we do have a guest with us today, which is very exciting. This guest I've known since I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
She's my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
She's also an amazing actor, and she's a writer and a creative beast teacher at the moment as well. And her name is Dana Miltins. Hello, Dana.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to the Keith Cheggers podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for talking to us. We have been sitting around here at your place talking for a little bit before we got the microphones out.
Yeah.
But it's been mainly Corona chat.
Yeah. Corona. Yeah.
I suppose we should give a context to... Yeah. People might just be tuning in. This might be down the line. They might be listening to 5 years.
Yeah, it might from actually their bunker. Be an apocalypse.
So we came to Australia. Everything got cancelled. We're going to go home in a few days.
Yeah.
To continue with our baby prep.
And when we recorded the other day, we were talking about whether we were going to get a flight home or not.
Yes.
And after a lot of hours on hold, we did manage to get a flight. So we're leaving in a couple of days.
Yeah. Mm. The dream is over.
Yeah.
Dream. The original plan to maybe stay here and have a child.
Yeah.
You said a very good thing, though, before, I mean, not in, this wasn't a critical of Hannah's parents in any way, but you were saying that actually, you know, it is the, even though it's going to be really mad everywhere, but actually having, when you have a baby, you want your own space and you want that period afterwards. So you don't want to be, if we were here, we would have been staying at Hannah's parents.
Yeah.
With a newborn.
There is a thing about it that I think is, that it gets forgotten a little bit, which is it can be very romantic,
right?
The start,
yeah,
like you literally feel like your heart explodes,
yeah,
and it's what you thought was love before, it's like then the boundaries of that push right out,
yeah.
And I think sharing that with a partner is really special, and protecting that space with a partner is really special. And I just, there's a part of me that's like, oh, if you're in a house with, especially family members who want to claim that time with you and also have that bonding time with the baby, of course they will have that. That's what family does in the future. But I am all for protecting some time. And like, you know, being, it is, I don't know.
Being
like,
your new family.
Yeah, and
right?
it is really romantic between a couple. Like, look what you just did. And it's a bit cheesy, but it's nice. Yeah.
I mean, that's really nice. Definitely, I have that instinct, definitely. Like,
yes.
It's a thing that I sort of feel like sometimes I feel bad about, but not really. Like my dad said something the other day, because they keep, it's this thing about when they're going to come and visit, right? So yeah. Right now, mum's like, it's going to be so expensive. We're not going to see you for 2 years.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If you do decide to prioritize that and want to come for a visit, you know, if you want to spend a little bit of extra money and come, then you're welcome to come.
Yeah.
And dad's like, you know, how, when are we supposed to come? I'm like, I've said the whole way along, probably about a month, you know, like a month after feels right.
Yeah.
You could come and visit then. But I really feel like... I would say,
like, the first 6 weeks for sure.
Yeah.
But also the first 12 weeks are insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is because initially we were going to be going to Edinburgh, which we don't know if it's happening.
Yeah.
Which is like 6-7 weeks after she's due.
Yeah.
So that's why trying to fit seeing mum and dad in before that was kind of like, you know, after 4 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can maybe come and visit.
Oh, God.
But there's a thing with mum as well.
Even that makes me feel sick.
That she's doing this whole, oh, well, you don't want me there. And I'm like, I mean, that's actually true, but I don't want you to feel like that about it.
Yeah, but it's
like,
not, yeah, it's not there's different reasons for, you know, some, we've talked to people who really, like,
want their mum with mother, them.
Like, with them, right.
I know people that had their mother at the birth.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like people, no.
Yeah.
But I think that's different people's relationships.
Yes, definitely.
With their parents and how they feel.
Yeah. But so my mum's bit like, she's like, oh, you don't even want me there. I'm like, mum, you've told me you don't want to be there. And she's like, oh, no, I don't want to be there. I didn't want to be at your birth.
Yeah, yeah,
like, okay, so stop trying to make me feel guilty about the fact that I'm saying don't come until afterwards. And I've got this other thing with being at home that I've really got this feeling like if I'm there much longer, it's like I'm a teenage pregnant mum whose high school boyfriend's just moved into my high school bedroom.
And I'm some,
and we're having
piece
a baby.
Of shit. It doesn't like just I'm probably too old for you. Or
I feel
when you're at your in-laws.
Yeah.
You
well,
always
I was
feel...
I was at home with my I was forced to be at home with my parents after I had Tilda because of living remotely.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to have a baby where we lived.
Yeah.
So I was forced to be, well, I had to be in Melbourne. I had to come back to be in Melbourne. So I flew at like 36 weeks to be near a hospital. And so then I was with my parents and don't recommend.
Diplomatic way of saying it.
Yeah.
It's pretty confronting.
Yeah.
You know, you're there, like I had massive issues in terms of health stuff and like chronic mastitis. And
do you know what that is, Carl?
What is it?
Mastitis.
I don't know what mastitis is.
Oh, it's the word. It's like hell.
It's when your nipples.
No, it's an infection
in your boob.
It's when milk gets blocked and it forms an infection. And it gives you the flu.
Oh,
so
right,
it's
okay.
Like you get fevers and sweats. You feel awful.
Yes.
You're trying to like it hurts like hell.
Mm.
You're trying to move like pussy milk through your breasts.
Yes.
You have to have them open and airing. You have cabbage leaves on your boobs and all the while your dad's looking at you. You know, like you're walking around the house like with cabbage leaves and your boobs out and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's fine with a partner.
Yeah.
But when your dad's like, hey, you want another cabbage leaf? Should I get you, you know? Oh,
yeah.
It's
or
just,
if
it's
you're
too much.
In a family where you've had that. You know, some families just don't have the normal
my
airs and graces.
Not, no, yeah. We're not close like that.
No, not at all.
But there's no way around it.
Because it has to be done.
It has to be done.
Yeah.
And you're in pain and it's, oh, God.
Yeah. So saying you were living remotely, so when you got pregnant and you were living in Yulara, which is in the centre of Australia near Uluru or Ayers Rock.
Right at the base of Uluru.
Yeah. And you're there with your husband.
Ex-husband now.
Yeah.
Yep.
You were there with your husband.
Yeah, I was there with my husband, yeah.
And you were living in a trailer at the time?
Yep.
At the Bronx?
Yep. We were living in a caravan because... Yeah, so we moved to Yulara because he got his license as a helicopter pilot and that's where they send you to get your hours up.
Yes.
And I was I'm an actor, but I knew that I wanted a baby and I thought, okay, we're going to be in this place for a year.
Yeah.
It'll be three. And then we're going to be in this place for a year, so like done, perfect, I'm going to get pregnant.
Yeah.
So we arrived in November, and then, like, I was pretty, like, my cycle's pretty, like, straight up. I knew what I had to do. December came round. I was like, right, now, let's do it.
And snakes.
So then, well, I had two weird things that happened because I'm, like, not very spiritual and, I mean, I guess I don't believe in star signs. I don't believe in the colour purple.
Right.
So I knew that I was, like, ovulating and I said to Matt, okay, now. And it was just after Christmas. It was 48 degrees Celsius for, like, 12 days in a row. And I was like, okay, now. And then he had to go to even more remote location for 2 weeks.
Right.
For New Year's Eve. So this was between Christmas and New Year's. And I got on a bus on New Year's Eve because I thought, okay, I'm going to go and see him. It's like a 4-hour drive on the bus away to this place called Kings Canyon, which is outside of, well, a long way into the Northern Territory. And I met this woman on the bus, this French woman called Michelle, saw me and said, could you come sit next to me on the bus?
Right.
And I said, yeah, okay. And she said, I do Reiki. Can I give you some Reiki? And I was like, okay, yeah, go for it. And I'm sitting on this bus, like literally in the middle of nowhere, and she starts doing Reiki on me, and she's like, close your eyes. Okay. And then all of a sudden she goes, you want to have a baby?
Wow.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, we just started trying. She said, you're pregnant.
No.
I would have been 4 days pregnant at this stage. 4 days.
Come on.
Yeah. She goes, she said, I don't know what it is. She said, but it's a very powerful soul. She said, in 4 weeks, you're going to find out that you're pregnant and I'll be back in France. Here's my email address. I want you to email me. As soon as you know you won't get your period, you're going to be pregnant.
What?
Email me and tell me.
Yeah.
And then you emailed her and never existed.
Then on that day, no, we still keep in contact. Oh, right. We still email. But then 4 weeks later, didn't get my period. I knew that I was. She was, so, again, like, I'm not one to believe those sorts of things, but I was like, yeah, yep, you're right.
Yeah.
And then I did the test, like, you know, a few weeks later. And then the day that I did the test, again, this is so weird, that night I woke up at about 2 o'clock in the morning and had to go to the toilet. And we lived in caravan. It's like a hellhole. In this weird kind of trailer park that was like...
Because the crazy about Yulara, there's enough accommodation for the people who work there, right? So it's all anyone who works at hotels, and it's just... Like, basically, that town services people who are visiting Uluru.
Yeah, and going to, like, the five-star resort.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's local Aboriginal communities, obviously. But they only have enough accommodation for the people who work there.
Yeah.
But we were put in accommodation, but it was a tiny kind of partitioned, subdivided donga. And the girl, with another couple, and the girl was really hard work. And so...
They used to go camel shooting and shit like
that. Yeah, they were really, you know, like, I remember I bought a rug and I put it in the lounge room and went to work and came home and she'd, like, rolled it up and put it in the bedroom. Just things like that. Like,
yeah.
So I was like, when I found this trailer that we could move into, I was like, gold.
Sort of like shanty. Yeah. It's like
Slab City.
Yeah.
Slab City, and it's like a miniature Slab City. It's like... You know that place in California?
No.
It's sort of like a no rules trailer.
Right.
People just go and... Yeah. Anyway, this was the trailer. There was about 17 kind of caravans there.
Yeah.
And it was down the road from the rubbish dump.
Yeah.
So like the five-star resort would dump, you know, every 7 years they dump every single ironing board in the place or every single desk.
Yeah.
And... everyone from the caravan park would go down to the rubbish dump and just cart back
all the
shit.
Boards.
And it was like, and just build, you know, there was like cinema and a weird.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we had this like outdoor area, let's call it. I woke up in the middle of the night on the day that I found out that I did the pregnancy test and went, yep, I'm pregnant. And I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go to the toilet because it wasn't, you had to go to a toilet block. And I opened the like door outside to the caravan and there was a, like a 1.5 meter snake like lined up on my doorstep with its head 30 centimeters from my foot as I stepped out. And I'd only up until that point seen brown snakes, which are deadly.
Yeah.
Because they're all over the place.
Right.
And so I freaked. Oh, like Jesus. I fucking freaked. Ran into the caravan and everyone has a number that they call because there's a snake catcher on call. So I was like, called the snake catcher at 2 o'clock in the morning, just going, there's a 1.5 meter like brown snake on my doorstep. I can't go to the toilet. I think I pissed in a bucket, like in the caravan, just going, fuck. And this guy comes and it's a, it turns out that it's a Cunia python, which is the indigenous fertility snake.
Why?
And you don't see them very often. I was there for 3 years and I saw two.
Right.
So you never see them, especially like, and I told,
on your doorstep.
I told indigenous old ladies, oh yeah, Cunia, you know, and I'm pregnant. They were just like, yeah,
like, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's.
And it was huge. Yeah. And it, yeah.
He came and, so he came and got the snake, right?
He came and got the snake. He put it in a bag.
Just move it somewhere else.
Yeah, and took it away.
But he could pick it up and everything because it was a python.
I mean, so they're not.
No.
Aggressive or anything.
No, no. They're not. It literally was just lined up.
Fertility symbol there to go.
Yeah. Well, and here you go.
Yes. Which is cool.
It's cool.
Did that not make you said you're not particularly spiritual. Did those two events not give you a little sort of inkling to believe stuff?
It's not that I'm not spiritual. It's just not in that way. Like, not in that kind of, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, I do believe now.
That's what I was getting at.
I do kind of believe now. I do think that was something very
special.
Special.
Yeah.
Very special, yeah.
But then sort of the reality of being pregnant and living in the middle of nowhere kicks in, right? So I remember you were so sick. For how long?
I was sick for, I think I started to feel better around week 20.
Mm-hmm.
And up until that, from about 6 weeks, week six to week 20, week 20, I felt like I was living in a nightmare.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like having the worst gastro you've ever had in your whole life. All day, every day, 24 hours a day.
And it was hot and things as well. So
summer. I was lying in a caravan that's from the 70s with a sort of 50 centimeter square aircon on the bed. Matt was gone for like 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Jeez.
And I was having to try and go to work sometimes, but for most of the time, I lay on the bed and cried. And people were going, "Oh, you could. Why don't you watch a DVD or why don't you read a book?" And literally for 20 weeks, I couldn't focus. It was just like next breath, next breath, next breath. And there was a midwife who was supposed to be in town, but she was on long service leave. So there was no doctors flew in every 3 weeks. And I remember I would go and see, but so you'd never see the same doctor if you tried to go to the doctor, and they were never very good anyway, because it's like, no one wants to go and do that job. And I remember just going and they would weigh me and every week, like, my weight was just plummeting because I couldn't eat anything. I couldn't stand up. I could hardly walk. It was like the worst hell on earth. And then finally I lost so much weight. I think I lost about 6 kilos by that state, but by about week 14 or so. And I'm already not a big person.
Skeletal.
Yeah, they decided I should fly back to Melbourne.
Yes.
and get some help, which I did. And I remember getting off the plane and my mum, like kind of gasped when she saw me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just looked like...
a ghost or something.
Yeah, and I was so skinny.
Yeah.
Like just... and I could, you know, I couldn't walk without holding onto a rail or like... it was just the dizziness and the nausea. And I started to get a bit better, I think, around week 16.
So did you, when you came back, what did the doctors do? Or was
I had already just started to get better.
Mm.
And so they were like, wow, you should have been in hospital. But there's no hospital.
Yeah.
So you really should have been in hospital on a drip getting hydrated up until now. But that wasn't, even the doctors in Yolara are like, well, you really should be in hospital. But there was no hospital.
And how did that make you, were you worried about your baby through that? Were you kind of like, okay. Or you just
couldn't think about anything.
Yeah.
Like I even remember just going to the supermarket because Matt was never around. I never saw, he was working like an 80-hour week or something. I never saw him. So I really had to try and get food into myself and buy it and stuff. But even the smell of going into the, there was a little IGA there. You know, I would be so faint that I would have to sort of hang on to shelves and pick something and then, you know, like hold on and buy it and shake, and then I'd get out of the supermarket and take me half an hour to get into the car because I have to like sit against the sort of, you know, the edge of the supermarket in 48 degrees, like trying to eat an icy pole and then and then try and get back to the caravan. Like everything was an ordeal.
Yeah. I came to visit you during
then
that
you came
test.
To visit me.
Was that after you'd come back?
Yeah,
and you were
much better.
Yeah, but you weren't well still.
Yeah.
You were like, I'm sorry, we're just going to have to lie down and watch DVDs. And I was like, that's okay.
I remember you had come like all this way to visit me at Uluru in this, you know, incredibly beautiful place where there's like not just Uluru, but there's Katajuda, there's these rock formations, there's the indigenous community where I was working. And and we lay in bed and watched Girls.
Yeah. For a week, I think.
With me just like vomiting over the side.
It was just after I met you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Remember when we went, when Carl and I had first met and we were at the airport together?
Yeah.
We'd met like 5 days before and you were flying back to England and I was flying to see Dharma.
Yeah, oh, I did not know this.
Yeah, when we and so Hannah came all this way and we just lay in bed in a caravan.
Yeah. But it was what had to be done.
And watched Girls, yeah.
Yeah. And because I remember, wasn't there like it was a paramedic who was one of your main sources of advice or something there, was it? Or was it just, I remember there was a woman who had to look in a book all the time to find out how to help you.
Yes, there was a locum doctor, I think. Yeah.
And she had basically no idea about pregnancy or...
yeah, because the midwife was on long service leave.
Yeah.
Just so happened.
Yeah. So, I remember you telling me you'd go and see her and she'd be like, hang on a sec, like looking things up in a book about what to do. And you were just in the middle of nowhere.
It really was very, it was just awful. It was awful.
So when you came back here at what, 16 weeks? You'd say 14 weeks?
I came back here at like, I know that I was back here for my 12, 13 week scan because I had to have that here because there was no option there. So and I then, must have come back before then.
But then when you hit, were you here for a long period or did you then go back to the...
I was here for like to try and get better.
Yeah.
So I think I must have been here for like a month.
Okay.
I think I flew back to get my scan. So I must have flown at 12 weeks. And then I went to get my first scan, that sort of 12, 13 week scan. And because Matt was working, he didn't come with me. So he wasn't present. So my dad came with me. And we sat
with his cabbage leaves.
We sat in the waiting room, and you could just see looking over their magazines, just going, "Oh, that poor girl,"
like
with her like 70-year-old partner. Yeah. And we went straight into the And I think my dad could feel people looking.
Yeah.
And we went straight into the appointment and immediately he said to the ultrasound person, I just need to let you know that I'm Dana's dad.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, thank God. Oh, that's a relief. Yeah. And she also said, we don't get many situations like this. And he was rapt.
Yeah.
Because he was like, we never had that when that's such clear imaging. So it was actually quite a nice, it turned out to be quite a nice.
Yeah, moment. Even though it looked like you were a creepy
even
couple.
Even though it looked like, yeah.
You and your old man.
Yeah.
But then you went back to the desert. You flew back and forth quite a lot, didn't you?
Yeah.
And so you said just before we started, you only had the 12-week scan and did you have another one or
I
just?
I had a 20-week.
Yeah.
Or around that time.
Yeah.
Maybe 20, 22.
That's when I'm did you sure. find out what you were having then
yeah.
as well? Yeah.
Yep.
And then you came back here to have your baby.
Yes.
And that was always the plan, yeah? You weren't ever going to have it.
You can't have it there. You could fly to Alice Springs, but because you had to leave town at a certain point, you get kicked out of remote communities. You can't stay because it's too dangerous to have a baby there because there's no help.
Yeah.
And so I would have had to go and live in like a kind of halfway house in Alice and just wait.
What about in the indigenous communities? Do
they're not allowed to have babies on country either. So they get sent to Alice Springs and they stay in those halfway houses.
Yeah, right.
Until they're ready and then they have them in the hospital. Yeah. Yeah. There's no. Yeah.
You can't. Yeah, right.
Oh, hello you. My name's Tom Price.
Hello, I'm Dave Cribb.
You should come and join us. Every day we do a podcast called Cabin Fever, where we talk to loads of comedians who've had to cancel everything else in their lives, so they come on our podcast instead, don't they, Dave?
Yeah, it's an isolation podcast.
Start of that sentence then? Was it just a little yawn?
Yeah, it's basically the Great Big Owl Isolation Podcast. We'll have people on from all our podcasts, from your Rule of Threes, your Brian and Rogers, your Musicals, your Bitchins. If you like any of our podcasts, if you like any of those people, chances are they'll be logging onto the Zoom call and just chatting, because let's face it, they got nothing else to do.
Also, there'll be a quiz on the bill. All right, see you soon. Lots of love.
Cabin FE83709. Oh, that's our Twitter name.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And so you came back here and had the baby. And then how long were you here with Tilda for?
I was here with Tilda for 6 weeks.
Did Maddie come back?
He came back the day, like a couple days before I was due.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember his flight got cancelled I was on the phone to Qantas going, if I go into labour, I'm going to kill you. But I was like 9 days overdue.
Yeah, right.
And then they were going to induce me on the 10th day. And I was so worried about it. I drank castor oil and it worked.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Castor oil?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's like it's awful, but it's basically...
Is it not what you put in cars?
No.
I know what you mean.
I know what you mean too.
Castrol.
Yes.
I genuinely thought this is some crazy Australian thing. Get a bit of oil in there, mate.
Yeah.
But
is it like a cod liver oil type thing?
Yeah, and it's an intense laxative.
Ooh.
And the downward motion, if you're ready, the downward motion. That's why they tell you eat spicy food.
Right.
It's not... It's because...
Is that a real thing, spicy food?
To help with labour, yeah, isn't
it's
it?
It's basically... It's
push stuff.
Spicy food is about making you do a shit.
Yeah.
And the downward, that kind of movement can start bring on labour.
Right.
And it really worked for me.
Okay, that's good. We get some hot sauces in.
And you don't... The bonus is you don't poo in labour because you do it
Because you've got it all out.
Yeah.
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 Because that's one thing that Carl and I had kind of been talking about over this last week was if we did stay here and then his visa got cancelled and then he has to go back to England, but then it was too late and I couldn't fly. Oh, like,
it's too stressful.
That idea for us that not being in the same
No, too stressful.
Was shit.
It was, dreadful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine missing the birth of your own baby.
I know.
It was so awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Matt, that thing of Maddie, that he did make it, and then he made it, so it was fine. And I realised, I've never asked you about, I don't remember anything about, because I think I was in London at the time when you were having a baby.
Yeah.
What was your labour like?
It wasn't...
After the castor oil.
After the castor oil, it wasn't awful. It wasn't... It wasn't, you know... It wasn't serene. It was far from.
Yeah.
It's like, it's...
Did you didn't take any drugs?
I didn't have any drugs. No.
Did you do gas and air?
No.
No.
Really?
It wasn't really offered.
Yeah.
Or not them weird TENS machines that some people
I had a TENS machine and I would swear by it.
Yeah.
It was the TENS machine that also I just, once I got addicted to it, I thought I would, like, you could have a water birth at that place. You could go in the water, but I couldn't take the TENS machine off, so I couldn't get in the bar. There was no way. But then...
That was, someone was saying to us that someone should invent a waterproof one.
Yeah. Because it's... Money. I just could not get into the water because
maybe
I could
my new
not...
business.
Yeah. Couldn't take the TENS machine.
Right. Yeah.
But I... Tilda, in the end, had something called shoulder dystocia.
Oh, yeah.
And so her shoulder was stuck in my lower back. So everything kind of went normally, but then her shoulder got stuck in my lower back and I just... couldn't push her around.
Couldn't
get her around. And so everything had sort of gone well, but then all of a sudden I'd been pushing and pushing and pushing. They went, something's not right. She's they could see her head when I was pushing, but then it would just go straight back.
Right.
They couldn't get her. And then all of a sudden they were monitoring her heart rate and it started to drop a bit more. And it's like, all of a sudden, there was 7 people in the room.
Yeah.
And I had been constantly on my front.
Yeah.
Because I found being on my back excruciating.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I was like on my back with people holding my legs and my arms and the doctor going, right, we need the vacuum.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'd had no, apparently doing this without drugs because I had none.
Just. Yeah.
So I had no, I just, all I remember is they just said the vacuum, they didn't seem to give, I've talked about this before, as in there didn't seem to be any choice at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
She just went, I'm going to give you an episiotomy. And I just went, no. And I have an actor's voice. Apparently my parents had arrived at the hospital and were like down the other side of it and heard me scream.
Wow.
Yeah. But and they still did it even after you said no.
They had already done it. It wasn't like. She just went, we're going to give you an episiotomy and just went, boom. And I was like, no, as they were doing it.
Yeah.
And then they just got the vacuum. And because I didn't have any time of, like, stretching and going through the motions of breathing through it or anything, they just, like, literally, like, sucked her out.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the... It's... You can't remember it because it's... It was so excruciating, like I was being torn in half.
Yeah.
And I
getting something ripped out of your body.
Actor's voice. Yeah. I remember arriving at the hospital and hearing a woman screaming and thinking, well, that's not going to be me. Oh, God, how embarrassing, you know. And then literally I was like, fuck, like.
Demon.
Yeah.
It was.
It's interesting, book that I've read by Ina May Gaskin.
I love that you've read books. I haven't read... Killed a six, so I haven't read a book.
And it was about they've this kind of hippie birth community called The Farm, and it's all midwives. And they talk about that shoulder dystocia quite a lot. But it explains that there's several births in it, and it's basically they all just get their hands. I don't know. This is a bit, I don't know how it happens, but they get their hands up in there and just turn the baby around.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, there'll be four hands up inside, moving the baby. I was like, I don't know how that happens. And then they just keep going into a natural birth and they do it without
vacuums. I guess they vacuums, do. That's just what the vacuum...
Yeah, but yeah, that's like they, yeah. those midwives on that the kind of community, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hands all up in
there's
it.
There's a way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, because the thing about you, Dana, you're very flexible.
I'm very flexible.
And our whole life I've known that. You were born bum first.
I was. Breech.
Breech. Yeah. Breech. In my head, it's always bum first.
Yeah.
And that you had a thing when you were a baby that you'd lie down and then your legs would flip up into the air.
Yeah.
Because that's how she was born.
Right.
So rather than lying flat, they'd just go ding like that.
Yeah.
And then Tilda had hip.
So then.
Things, didn't she?
Well, Tilda had a lot of issues.
Did she?
Yeah. Oh, God. My first year was just a disaster. It was an absolute... freaking disaster. It was just awful. Tilda had hip dysplasia, but that was probably about the least of my...
Really?
Yeah. Do you not remember?
Nah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
What was the... Talk us through it.
I feel like... Yeah. Do you want to...
Yeah,
totally.
We want to know all the stuff.
Well, I had...
But before she was born, there was no... Like, everything was fine, right? You had no indications there was any problems with...
Yeah. No, everything was fine.
Yeah.
Everything was totally fine. And I had, in the end, my birth was 12 hours. Yes, I used a vacuum, but it was natural.
Yeah.
I stayed at the hospital less than 24 hours because I asked to leave because literally I was standing there with a screaming baby and no one would help me.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, can I just go? And they're like, yeah. And then, so then when my milk kicked in, that was when things went really bad because I probably had enough milk for four babies and it just, I would look, my milk situation was insane. My boobs were just... engorged.
Yeah.
And Tilda had reflux. So she didn't want to feed. And so I couldn't, pumping, just I was trying not to like increase my milk supply, but literally I was just soaking through breast pads. I'm talking like a pack a day of just soaked breast pads.
Just pouring out.
I would see women on the street breastfeeding babies and think, well, that's impossible. If I got Tilda anywhere near my boob and took my bra off, my milk would shoot 2 meters easily across the room. Like, imagine doing that in public. Just like I could just shoot around like with my boobs, just firing milk all over the place. My mum had to, so I would, because I was staying at their house, I would feed in their spare room with a, on this chair, and my mum had to get the carpet steam clean milk would just shoot everywhere, and she was so angry. She's like, "This is a new house, Dana." Like, and I was like, "I can't help it." Just like milk all over the floor. Like,
that's another site. Like, you're a fertile goddess, and that's like another.
I needed four babies. Said I would have been that person in the town.
Yeah,
that
who everyone fed everybody.
Who didn't. Yeah. But it was such a curse because then once I got mastitis, I couldn't not get mastitis. So every time I went off antibiotics, the mastitis would come back. And then at 6 weeks, I went back to the desert. And of course, there was no help. And I'd only had mastitis like once by then, so I wasn't quite sure what I was in for.
Yeah.
But I got back and... the mastitis started again. They gave me antibiotics. They didn't work. And I had to go, I had to go to the car park of the clinic and sit I think I had to get Matt to come back from work, and I had Tilda, who was like 6 weeks old, and I was sitting in the car park in like 42 degrees because the clinic was closed, waiting for the nurse who came and put a cannula in my arm in the car park to give me intravenous antibiotics. God. And I had to meet the nurse in the car park every 6 hours or something to top up my antibiotics.
God.
And they would do it in the car park. And she of the clinic, and Tilda was like tiny, and it was hard to, I couldn't bring her because getting out of the car is like 44 degrees or something in the sun. It was so awful. And then finally, the intravenous antibiotics were not working, and the doctor was like, you need to go to the hospital. And I said, it's a 5.5 hour drive. And she was like, yeah, that's why I'm telling you, you need to leave now.
Oh. And so you had an apocalypse baby.
Like, get ready. Yeah. So then we got into the car. I had to call Matt and say, we have to go to Alice Springs to the hospital. I had a cannula in my arm. I had boobs that were so engorged and infected that just to walk was like excruciating. They thought I had an abscess as well, so I had to go and see if I had an abscess in my boob. So we would, and Tilda would not, wouldn't feed.
Yeah.
And so I was worried about her.
So were you feeding her with a bottle then? Or
no, like, I was nothing, still trying to get her to like suck out the fucking pus from my breasts.
Yucky!
Which is great. And then, she was not, you know, they call it failure to thrive. She just wouldn't eat. And so I remember I have post-traumatic stress from that car ride because I had I was sitting in the back trying to drop breast milk into her mouth with an eyedropper for 5.5 hours because it's 40 degrees outside.
Yeah.
And she won't feed and we're in the car and I'm like, also with the flu-like symptoms of mastitis, feeling like I'm going to die. And then, got admitted to Alice Springs Hospital and spent about 5 days there on intravenous antibiotics and seeing what life was like.
That's not like failure to thrive. That's kind of another one of those terms like Wendy Wason said to us in the second week, like hostile environment.
Oh, it's just
all the words that they use is quite intense.
Yeah.
And
so then once you were in the hospital, was she starting to feed or how did she begin to thrive?
Yeah. So then it just gets worse. Like if that sounds bad enough, it gets worse. I got out of hospital, went back to Ilara, I think I flew that time.
Mm.
My mum came because Matt dropped me at the hospital and left and went back to work. And then I flew back to Ilara with my mum and Tilda and got mastitis again.
Oh, God.
And my mum was still there and just said, look, I think come back to Melbourne.
Yeah.
So I came back to Melbourne and went to see my doctor, who I have a really good relationship with, and she was like, look, I don't see any choice. You either stay in Melbourne and breastfeed and we manage your mastitis with appointments and we'll do what we can with getting lactation consultants and all of the things that you need to try and manage that.
Yeah.
Or you stop breastfeeding if you want to go back to the desert. And my intuition was to stay here and just manage it because I felt safe. But Matt was saying, oh, that's not fair. I need to be able to see my baby.
Yeah.
I want you to come back. I want you to stop breastfeeding and come back. And so I did it for him.
Yeah.
I went back to the desert and it was very painful to stop breastfeeding because especially when you've got like oversupply as well, you're trying to stop it and you're trying to just take a bit off. And I didn't go back to the desert. I stayed here and tried to put Tilda on formula and she ended up being allergic to formula.
God.
So we ended up in the Royal Children's Hospital.
I do remember this.
Because I tried to stop breastfeeding, she was allergic to formula. And then we tried to find a formula. They have these special formulas that the milk protein is broken down, and so we had to find a formula that she could take.
Yeah.
And at the hospital, that's when they went, oh, and she's got hip dysplasia. We need to put her in a hip brace. So yeah. It was just like, it was like a comedy of errors my first year. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of not the end of it, but
Carl's sitting. Yeah. You look shell shocked.
Well, yeah, it's just a lot to, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. It's that thing.
The idea that they come out.
Because that thing is, I suppose everyone panics in all the build-up. And obviously there are things that can happen in the pregnancy. We get told of issues. But the fact that you had the difficulties early on and then for it to be surprised with a bunch of new issues afterwards.
But also everyone just looks to the birth.
Yes.
Is it sort of, whether you have a natural birth or a cesarean, whatever, it's the be-all and end-all. I'm like, nah, who cares?
Yeah.
It's the after.
Well, that's
and
it,
who
yeah.
cares how you have it? Seriously?
Yeah.
Like the... It honestly doesn't matter. It's that, for me, that, no one, I felt so underprepared.
Yeah.
For,
But you can't know that stuff's going to come to you or not. You don't know that you're going to have the breast supply for a village.
You can't be prepared for that.
No, but you can probably also,
be aware of them.
Be aware of those
sorts of
things.
Yeah, I suppose.
Maybe.
But you can be aware, but still not prepared. I suppose.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. Like I said, that sounds all quite apocalyptic. And you just being in a car park and stuff. It is interesting what we're going back to potentially in London and the way that hospitals will be.
Yeah, and that you might be. I was Skyping a midwife.
Yeah.
Who was when I went back to Yalara, it got worse from there. I mean. It continued for a long time in that when I finally went back, that formula that we got Tilda on was she could tolerate it, but it made her reflux worse.
Yeah, yeah.
So then that was a whole new thing of dealing with that. And I was Skyping with a midwife remotely who was trying to help me.
Yeah.
From there. And she was and did it all for free, and she was just amazing.
Yeah.
Because there was no one.
No one else to help you.
There was no one to help you. I remember taking Tilda to, because this certain formula could make babies more constipated, and taking her to the doctor in Yalara and saying she's I know she's constipated. And they were like, well, we don't have anything here to give her.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, what do we give her? And they're like, well, we can get it from Alice Springs, but it's going to take 5 days to get here. Enough. And you just...
Yeah.
But I need it... Just negotiating things like that was so stressful.
Well, yeah, it's like I phoned up the hospital in London just a couple of days ago once we knew we were flying back because of this... because before we left, being told to have scans at 28 weeks and at 32 weeks, which I'd booked in here when we arrived. And then thought I'd call them up so we could book them in for when we got back. And they said, oh, we're not doing 28-week or 32-week scans anymore. Because they're just not having people come into the hospital for things that are unnecessary. She's like, let me just look at your notes. So it just says that it's because of your age that we're doing them, so we don't think we need to.
Yeah.
And then I made an appointment, finally spoke to a couple of people. They were all really helpful, and made an appointment with the doctor because we haven't had one yet. And that's booked in, but then they're like, it might be a phone call.
Yeah.
Because we're just not having
course.
People
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and they don't know what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the thing, I think. Yeah, we're just going to have to play it by ear, aren't we? But I think it seems like everywhere is going to go that way. Even here, I can imagine in just next month or so, if today they're shutting down loads of stuff in Victoria, I think, give it a month, the hospitals here are going to be doing similar things. So I just think wherever we are, at least...
Yeah, well, even the service, the way that they're offering services.
Yeah,
change. After, from about when I started to get better in my pregnancy, so the second half, where I was actually quite fine, and I really trusted, and I really made this decision because I was remote as well. I remember people like, oh, you have to do this workshop and you have to try this kind of class. And it was so not accessible to me. And there was one where I remember a friend saying, no, this is essential. You need to go and do this workshop. And I looked at flights to Melbourne and how much that was going to cost and just went, okay, I need to make a decision now to just go, I'm going to do this by myself.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just trust myself and I'm going to be okay. And I didn't go to a class. I didn't go to any prep.
Yeah.
I didn't read a book. I mean, I probably should have. I just decided to trust myself.
Yeah.
And do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good that as the pregnancy went on, then it got a bit easier as well. So you could a bit more, that it wasn't, you weren't faced with too many problems once.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Once you got to ride that out a little bit.
Now.
No.
So.
No.
You know, Yeah.
I definitely.
But if you got, I just had to be okay with not doing those classes or not.
Yeah,
exactly. I think.
Well, I mean, things that are definitely going to get cancelled that we've lined up. Yeah. Like NCT classes. I mean, they're not going to be happening.
Yeah.
Just they physically can't for health reasons.
And honestly, I still had I had a pretty good birth.
Yeah.
Aside from, I mean, what happened afterwards, but no birthing class was going to fix that anyway. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So, there's nothing, again, it's like, Mum said something this morning, she's like, oh, it's not a great time to bring your baby into the world. But I was like, it's fine. It's going to make things good and fun and cool and new.
And you can never predict when's a good time to bring a baby into the world. Yeah. It also depends where you live. There'll be people that, you know, in different parts of the world that have gone through mad things, you know.
Yes, it's intense what's going on, but having a baby is you hibernate for a while.
Yeah.
It's a real recalibration of the biggest recalibration is what you can do in a day.
Yeah.
And what you could do in a day to now what you can do in a day.
Yeah.
And that's so hard to adjust to.
Yeah.
Especially if you're used to being very productive, which you are.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's a huge identity kind of.
I think sure. I definitely have been doing bits of that just ever since getting pregnant and kind of doing IVF. I was very clear in my mind about going, I've just got to make some space in my life, like try and do a bit less, because otherwise how am I going to make space for a baby once?
But it's extreme. They get here. Like, it's like you might struggle to have a shower.
I definitely think there are some, and I think doing this is really. Yeah. Helped with the reality of it.
Yeah.
So I definitely think there's some people that have a kid and think, yeah, it'd be great. We'll just sit around watching box sets while the baby's there. That is not how it works. They need constant attention.
I think sometimes it does.
I suppose if you luck out and have a baby that from the word go is sleeping a lot. But like, I think you're not suddenly just going to be like a couple, like the first year is going to be just, oh, I'm just going to be catching up on loads of TV.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
For me, there was a massive identity issue too.
Mm-hmm.
And a huge expectation that from my now ex-husband that all of this I was supposed to be sort of, that I should find it easy and natural because I'm a woman.
Right.
And being mother, wife, kind of.
Yeah, and that should also be like all of a sudden all of my identity, which I didn't feel like it was.
Yeah.
And that I should be, that I should be loving it. And I was not.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I really, this expectation that I should be loving it and I was hating it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'll take from this is I'll have no expectations of Hannah.
Yeah. Well, no, even just that you should not
I'm not expecting you to deal with it in any particular way. Yeah. However you deal with it, that'll be the way you deal with
we'll
it.
We'll go and get a cabbage at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
Chuck some leaves in the freezer just ready.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, do it. Yeah.
Well, that was awesome.
Just rebalance. That the podcast for you with all the women who are like, I had a great pregnancy. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. But it all turned out fine. Tilda's fine.
She's amazing.
She's amazing. It's all gone the other direction.
Which I actually think that's a good end point to say. Because often I think, especially for young, new parents, the baby has anything wrong, you think, oh, this is the end of the world. Where actually a lot of things that happen to babies tend to be...
Yeah, know, she's totally like healthy and grow out no problems.
The most incredible kid now. Yeah. And also, weirdly, the easiest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas we had the hardest first year, but now... easiest child. I got it out of the way.
Yeah. Just wait and then to be a teenager.
I just think everyone gets something. You never get off easy.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, we're just going to wait and see.
Just wait.
Yeah. I know no one does, but please can we get off easy?
Yeah, we can ask permission. Yeah. Can we please get off easy?
Yeah. Or just easier.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, Dana, for talking to us today in your lounge room. Telling us all those stories. I think, I've seen your face, Carl, has really changed throughout this.
It was more of the fact that I think I was just, it's such an extreme location to be going through all that.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to compute.
Yeah.
It makes you, even though we've had a bit of a stressful week trying to work out where we're going to be when the baby's born. Both options, Melbourne or London, are about as good as you can get to have a child. So. I was thinking about how lucky we are.
Bringing on the gratitude, yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll be back in London next time we record.
Hopefully.
Who knows? Just going to be the two of us.
All flights might get cancelled.
All flights might get cancelled. We're going to go into quarantine for 2 weeks once we get there.
We'll do 2 weeks.
We may not have any guests for a couple of weeks. But
we've got to finish Succession season 2.
We're going to do a lot of social media for this.
Yes.
Which we haven't done, so... it's going to be up there. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Cheers.
Thanks, Dana.
Bye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
I'm Tilly Steele.
And I'm Helen Monk.
And this is Bitchin'.
I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, why do you read the Wikipedia page?
It's good to practice.
A podcast where every week we talk about a different person.
So how old was he when he first popped on the scene?
That's a great question.
If you say he was my age, I'm gonna fucking die.
And we veer wildly off track.
Pop that Prosec.
Available on all your podcast apps. That's not my... just
can you not say in the advert?
Available on all your podcast platforms. Just search Bitchin' or Great Big Owl.
We'll see you there.
That was all right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.